Everyone, and welcome to Minute 53 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is John Parker of the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, John.
Hey, hey! Thanks for having me.
No problem. No problem. Minute 53 begins with Otto fashioning his new prize on his jacket. And ends with Simon and the men around him waiting patiently. So, I mean, I like the way that this movie has, you know, multiple areas of stuff that are going on all at the exact same time. Yes. You know, the editing job here is amazing. You know, the way of constantly jumping back and forth between, like, right now, what do we have? Like, we have four different places that they're jumping. Yeah, you know, you have down in the subway, you have on the street, you have Simon in the, you know, in the Fed, and then you have John and Zeus also, and it just keeps jumping back between them.
It's hard to do that well.
Yes.
Because we've, in fact, you know, last minute we talked about Star Wars, and Star Wars is a prime example of both sides of that. You know, because Return of the Jedi, it jumps around between different things going on, three different areas, and it works, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But then, famously, Phantom Menace, there's a bit where George Lucas is, you know, showing it to people for the first time, and he actually says, "I think maybe we've gone too far in a few places," and that was what he was talking about. It's like, because it was jumping around, it was too much, and correct, it was like all over the place. This nails it though. This is great. You're never lost or confused. You understand. You remember everything. You know.
Right, and even in it, within I think today, or maybe it's tomorrow, you know, they're going to add in even more things that are going on, and you know, we're constantly trying to follow each of these characters, but they do a great job of showing each of these characters for literally for seconds, so that it's all still fresh in our mind.
This movie as well gets away with something that a lot of movies can't do, which is there's big stretches. There's another one coming up where you don't even see your hero.
That's right.
There's a big stretch of the movie where it's like you're with Simon. And that's amazing. Like, I can't imagine the studio signing off on that usually. It'd be like, no, hang on a minute. You need to show the lead. Come on. Like, no. He can pop up after another 20 minutes. It's fine.
That's right. So the editor of this movie is a man named John Wright. And just to give you an idea of what other movies he edited, you know, he has 43 IMDb credits in editing, but included in those is Speed, The Hunt for October, The Running Man, X-Men.
Okay.
Broken Arrow, The Thomas Crown Affair, 13th Floor. Okay, so obviously he's John McTiernan's editor. You know, with the last
Speed
Action Hero.
Makes sense to me as well, though. Speed fit, like, I would say that's probably the closest to this.
Yes. Yeah, but with Speed, it doesn't jump around that much.
No. It's different. It's shot and edited similarly, but it's more localized.
It's more focused on the actual story of what's, you know, it focuses more on Keanu Reeves' character.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, with that. So, yeah, for sure. So the minute begins with us watching Otto, you know, finishing to pick up the badge that he just took off of Walsh's dead body, and put it into his pocket, and he puts it into his breast pocket on his jacket, and they give us actually a pretty gruesome shot of Walsh, which I found to be really interesting, because they show basically the blood dripping down onto his face because he's upside down. You know, he was shot in the chest. Quite... He was shot in the chest, but there's blood all over his face because gravity has pulled it down. You know, so again, this goes back to, you know, we talked about this during Die Hard 2, you know, that after Cochran, you know, got killed on the luggage belt, right? So, you know, if you're watching this minute by minute, you can actually see what the body looks like. And, like, he looked like Darth Maul. You know, he was that red. His like whole the makeup they used on him with his cadaver was completely all red and stuff like that. So, you know, it always amazes me when you watch things minute by minute. So it's you notice so many different things, and we're gonna come across something later in today's episode, today's minute, where we alluded to it earlier this week, but where it's something that you don't notice because you're not looking for it. It's not, you know, but when you do it minute by minute and you're going the entire minute, you're like, wait a second, I can't believe I didn't notice that. I've seen this movie so many times, you know. And
doing these shows has only made me like the movies more.
Oh, for sure.
I know some people have the opposite experience, and they've ended up not liking their movie, which is a shame. Because I'm like you, like I spot things that I never in a million years would have noticed.
Correct.
And it just makes the film better because you're like, oh my god, they thought about that.
That's right. They took the time to do that, you know. And then even if it's just a few seconds, but someone thought and said, hey, wait a second, why don't we add this here? You know.
Yeah. Yeah, dedication.
Especially knowing that most people are not going to notice it.
No, 99.9%.
That's right, because there is not a single filmmaker in probably any of the movies that have been done by Movies by Minute, okay, where the filmmaker said, hey, wait a second, in X number of years from now, people are going to start looking at this movie, you know, minute by minute, so maybe we should do something. I don't know, but, you know, that... Maybe nowadays there might be directors out there that will think about this type of stuff. You know, maybe Joe Johnston is now thinking that because you know he was on the Rocketeer Minute with Jim and Hal, and now they're doing October Sky where he's on it. So you know he's been exposed to this idea, but there aren't that many filmmakers that have been brought into the fold, I guess you could say, of Movies by Minute. So, you know, it'd be interesting.
At the same time, though, it's always fascinating when you watch a movie and you break it down into minutes and mm-hmm. you realize it's almost like the director did it deliberately. You're like, oh, hang on, all these minutes are perfect as minutes.
That's right. That's correct.
It's so strange when that seems to happen.
Yeah, it doesn't happen as often as we would like, but sometimes but sometimes you notice how things are broken up much better. 100%. And so basically, Otto takes the badge and puts it in his breast pocket. Now, do you know why most, shirts or jackets or whatever only have a breast pocket on the left-hand side?
No, I'm trying to think. That's a very, very good question. I've never, ever thought about that at all. But yeah, I'm thinking about jackets I've got. I think almost all of them, maybe bar one, just has the one pocket.
Mm-hmm. Huh. But can you think of why it might be only on the left-hand side?
Let me think. Is it to do with getting your badge out while also holding a weapon?
No, I'm not talking about...
Most people will be right-handed.
We're all not... Well, that's what it is. It's because most people are right-handed.
I'm on the right track, but not with a weapon. It's like you reach for it with your right hand. Okay.
That is correct. Now, what do most people, at least historically, keep in their breast pocket? Not cops.
That's what I'm confused. I was like, surely it's a police badge, as we see here.
most people would walk around with handkerchiefs.
Oh, you're going old school. Okay, I thought you meant like modern times.
No,
okay.
I didn't say. I said. Yeah, yeah. I said. So the idea is that you know you can reach with your right arm and you pull it out directly from there.
Yeah, that's what I think. I have owned one that's got two, but that's a rarity. And I think that was some bizarre 80s double-breasted thing. So
that's right.
That might be why the 80s was strange.
Okay. That's fine. And do you know how they actually decided to start putting pockets on shirts? Because shirts historically didn't have pockets.
I mean, I would guess it's something to do with people like jackets falling out of favor, maybe. And they're not wearing them as much because you still want somewhere to put your stuff.
Okay. It actually started in the 50s and two famous actors are actually responsible for it. James Dean and Marlon Brando.
Oh, whoa, okay.
Would walk around with white T-shirts, and they would have pockets sewn onto the T-shirts.
Oh, let me guess. Was it to, like, put cigarettes in or something?
Yes, it was.
I knew it. I could just picture it.
That's right. It was, and so it became a fad. You know, I mean, nowadays people put pens or a phone or a credit card and stuff like that, you know.
That makes sense, because every person you see around that time who's not them, so it's probably before the fads picked up, they always do that thing where they put the pack of cigarettes in the sleeve and roll it up.
That's right.
So they're obviously the people who haven't got the memo yet.
Apparently not. And a famous story about a jacket pocket was that Theodore Roosevelt, when he was giving a speech in 1912, he was already president at the time, and so he had a speech of 50 pages that was folded and left in the pocket of his jacket. And
50.
And because of this, he someone shot him, and he was saved by the fact that it was 50 pages that were folded over.
Because he wrote too damn much.
he didn't win the election, but still. But he survived. But he survived, yes. So, yeah. So then the scene changes, and we see John and Zeus jogging. You know, they're trying to get to Tompkins Park. And so they start up a conversation.
This is one of my favorite bits. You know what? I say that. Every single scene with Zeus is actual gold.
Yes.
Like, we're going to talk about Samuel L. Jackson a lot later.
Yes.
He's always great. He's always, even when he's in a bad movie, I never find him bad. He's always compelling.
Yeah, because he also knows what he's doing and takes it all in stride.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And if you'd said to me before this came out, oh, we're going to team John McClane up with someone properly this time, not just like over the radio, I'd be like, oh, God, you're ruining it. But no, they're not ruining it. It's somehow perfected the formula. It's correct. Genius. I think because the banter goes back and forth as well. It's not just like one's the wisecracker. You know, they both attack each other all the time.
Yes. Do you know who originally was supposed to play the character of Zeus?
No, I don't, but... I mean, from the dialogue and stuff, I mean, would it be like an Eddie Murphy or someone?
No, it was supposed to be Lawrence Fishburne.
Lawrence? Oh, that would work really well. See, I was picking the obvious choice. That's why I was a bit like, oh, I don't want to say that. Fishburne, that would be good. As great as he is, though, I love him. I think Samuel L. Jackson just has a natural, gift of the gab. I don't know what it is. Like, you could tell me he just came up with a lot of these lines on the fly himself, and I believe you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
Whereas I love Fishburne, but I just don't get that vibe off him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And they also wanted to make this a Lethal Weapon movie at some point, so I couldn't see Murtaugh, acting this way.
No, I think you could have this plot in a Lethal Weapon movie. That would work. But you'd have to change a lot of the other stuff around the actual, you know, like the character dialogue.
I actually have to disagree with you on that, because I think that one of the things that makes this work is that Zeus and John don't know each other. And they
that makes it a better movie. Yeah.
And they need to trust one another, you know, with this whole thing. If you have Riggs and Murtaugh, it wouldn't work the same way. Unless that was unless maybe it was the first movie. Of the series,
yeah. I think they could have pulled it off. It wouldn't be as good as this, though.
Right. Okay.
But I think it makes sense. Like the story, it could happen to them. You know, I'd be like, okay, yeah. But it would only be good if this didn't exist.
Right. That's true. So Zeus turns to John and says, "So what's up with this LA thing? You famous or something?" And John goes, "Yeah, for about 5 minutes." Just don't tell me. Rodney King, right?
That killed me. That was so clever.
And you would think maybe too soon, even 4 years afterwards.
But that's the character that Zeus, the character, would be talking about that. He would bring that up, even if he doesn't believe. He probably doesn't actually believe that he was involved in that. He's just, oh, I'll attack him with it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So Rodney King, do you know who Rodney King was?
Yes.
Okay, will you tell us who Rodney King is was?
I mean, I don't want to speak like I'm an authority on the situation, but yeah, I mean, he was famously somebody who was a victim of like police brutality, wasn't he? Quite severely beaten and whatnot, and to the point where it was like it was big news, even though I mean, it happens a lot, sadly, but this was like so extreme.
He was a man who was driving drunk, and he was trying. The police were trying to pull him over, and he didn't want to pull over. And when they finally pulled him over, then they ended up beating him up.
Yeah, Re like not just beating him up though,
That's
it's
right.
like extreme, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you get people defending it, going like, oh yeah, but if he's driving drunk, blah, and yeah, okay, that is bad. It doesn't deserve that treatment though. You
Correct.
know, no one deserves that treatment. No, even if you've committed a crime.
That's right. I agree with you on that one. And someone nearby saw that it was going on and videotaped it. And they ended up there was a big court case, and two of the cops ended up going to jail. The other two were released. But because of this whole thing, the when the jury at the beginning couldn't reach a verdict, so they the LA riots started in 1992.
Oh yeah, didn't people died as well
Yes.
during the riot, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, 63 people were killed, and 2,383 were injured.
Whoa. Okay, that's more than I thought even. Whoa.
Yeah.
'Cause I knew they had to like call in like the army and stuff, didn't they, to sort
Yes.
of help quell it.
The California National Guard and the Army and the Marine Corps were brought in to try to keep the
Whoa.
peace.
Yeah, but in doing that, I understand they might think they're keeping the peace, but it's probably just making it even worse, isn't it? Because
Yeah.
then people are going to get angry that the army are there. Oh, it's a whole thing.
Correct. Yep.
But then
That.
what's the solution? I don't know. When the whole it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the way these things is. These things go.
Exactly.
So
Yeah.
after Zeus makes that comment, John just looks at him and goes, F you. Great.
See, he understands it's a joke. It's a pointed joke.
Yeah.
He means like the message behind it. He's being serious here, but he's also joking and winding him up,
That's right. It's a combination of both. And John understands that. You're right.
Yeah. They have a really good rapport, the two of them. Like
Yes.
the way they just, make fun of each other back and forth. And it's a rare movie that can bring discussion of like race into it.
Yes.
But not, I don't think it's not going to anger anyone, I would think. Like, you're not going to get weird white supremacists being angry at Zeus too much. I think they quite like him, to be
Right.
honest. And vice versa. I think it seems to bring people together with their sort of joking, fighting.
I agree with you on that. And then Zeus says to him, "You know this guy Simon we're talking to?" And he goes, "Yeah. I threw his little brother off the 32nd floor at Nakatomi Towers out of LA. I guess he's a little pissed off about it."
But again, I love the twist that he's not really that pissed off about it.
That's right. But we
That's
don't know
so
about that.
clever. Oh,
Now,
so smart.
do you notice an inconsistency or a goof in the facts of what John says here?
Oh, I didn't. Read it to me again.
He goes, "Yeah, I threw his little brother off the 32nd floor of the Nakatomi Towers out in LA."
Isn't he the older brother? No, okay.
He threw him off the 30th floor, not the 32nd.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Oh, God damn. Actually, I should know. I was on Die Hard Minute, but to be fair, we only did 10 minutes each.
There you go. I've done the
That
whole
was our
thing.
remit.
Yes. And then Zeus looks at him and goes, "Wait a minute. You mean to tell me I'm in this shit because some white cop threw some white ass off a roof?"
It's so, oh God, I love that line. It's everything he says.
A great line. Because it's true also.
It's true. Like, because this poor guy, think about it in the real world. This poor guy, he put himself out there to try and stop what he thought was a racist jerk from being murdered. He could have just let that guy be murdered. And now all of a sudden he's involved in all of this.
That's right.
And presumably his shop has been ransacked, which he referenced earlier on.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think ransacked is putting it like nice, putting it nice.
Yeah. I don't think it exists anymore.
No, don't think so either. So it's a great and concise way for Zeus to respond to this whole thing. So it's great. I really like
it. It is good.
Yeah.
It's big of like McLean to just say, yeah, you know what? It's all because of this stupid thing that happened. That's not even like a serious matter. It's this dumb thing that I did a few years ago.
That's right. Well, what's also nice is that it shows that it affects John, but it's not guiding his life.
Mm. Yeah. It's not been some traumatic thing.
That's right. It's something that happened. Okay. I killed the scumbag and that was it. You know,
it's also quite realistic that other people would have forgotten about it by now, mm-hmm. and not really care anymore. You know, the general public, like, oh, but, you know, the Nakatomi thing, what was that? Oh, yeah, there was some terrorist stuff a few years ago. I don't know.
That's right. Correct. And then, you know, that's all we get of the two of them right now. And then we have a shot of all of Simon's men, you know, getting their gear together. You see that they take a bridge layer off of a trailer that it's so on. Are you familiar with bridge layers? Have you ever seen them before?
I have in my sort of studies, because I was a history graduate, so you know, like looking up war time vehicles and things like this. But as a kid, when I watched this, I had no clue what I was looking at. I was like, what a weird tank.
I mean, I was a fan of G.I. Joe as a kid.
Mm.
So G.I. Joe had one of their characters who was in charge of the bridge layer. I think, if I remember correctly, I think his name was Tollbooth, which makes a lot of sense. I'm trying to remember right now what his name was. But
yeah, I'm surprised, like, over here... G.I. Joe, it was over here, but it wasn't a big thing, which I'm surprised at, because everything else around that was huge. You know, like, I was a Transformers kid.
Oh, wow.
And G.I. Joe's not too dissimilar, really, correct. Like with the toys.
I mean, they came out at the same time. Similar. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm surprised. I think it's purely because it's got a very strong American feel. You know, to the packaging on the toys and things.
Well, not just that. It's because it's a patriotic.
It's patriotic. So I think that's why people here just went, no, not for me.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you.
Some kids were into it. Like,
I got to tell you, I was right. His name is Tollbooth.
There you go. Yay.
And on the G.I. Joe, the Joepedia, it says Tollbooth was an engineering prodigy. The building sets he made as a child were renowned for their size and complexity. It was only natural that he entered MIT for his engineering degree. When he became involved in construction projects, he made his reputation for finding solutions to engineering problems that haven't cropped up until they went past the drawing board. Finding solutions became his personal challenge, and when he ran out of anything to pick out, the military became his next stepping stone. There it became his job to find all manner of ideas to get past the obstacles to where the Joe team had to have to be. He couldn't be happier.
That's actually a really great backstory for a kids thing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's teaching the kids to stay in school.
That's right.
All those cartoons then had a message, didn't they? Stay in school, say no to drugs, all this kind of stuff.
Oh wow, this is even funnier. So they also have like his real name. His real name is Chuck Gorin, right? So each character obviously has a real name also, not just their code name. And it says that he's named after a man named Charles Gorin, who was a world champion bridge player.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, bridge layer.
Bridge layer, bridge player.
There you go. That's really cool.
Somebody probably came up with that as an idea. Like, ha, I'm a genius.
Yes. And, I've always noticed that they have bridge layers. But, you know, when I was doing the research now, I kept wondering, what do they need a bridge layer for? Like, where does that fit in? And we're actually going to see shortly where they actually use it, which is even cooler.
Yeah, because I think that's another one of those things. When I just watch the movie casually, I don't sort of realize what they do with it. It's only when you break it down like this
that's right.
that you go, oh, wait a minute. Okay.
That's right. So it's great that they do that. And then we're back with Simon and his men in this lobby. You know, you have three of them that are sitting there. Simon is holding his forehead. I guess maybe he's getting a little bit of a migraine at this point or something like that. You know,
oh, yeah, that's a good
point. He seemed like rubbing his
eyes. I just thought he was being impatient, but it's the migraine, definitely.
Yeah. And then they have this great little segment that I never noticed before. And, you know, you and I have alluded to it over the last few days. So one of the guards looks over and you see him, you know, put a piece of gum in his mouth and then look down. And then the camera shows us that he's looking at someone's feet and he's these combat boots. And you see the look on his face. He like stops chewing. He's like, wait a second, what's going on here?
That's a bit strange for some guys with a flower merchant.
That's right. And then he looks over to the left and he sees another guy also with combat boots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can.
I think you used the right words as well when you said a little moment.
That's right.
Because it is. That's what's so good about it, right?
That's right.
It doesn't overplay it, doesn't make a big deal out of it. It's just this guy slowly putting stuff together and being like, that's unusual.
You know, which is great because it shows that, you know, he may be quote unquote cannon fodder, but, you know, we have a character who's actually thinking and wondering what's going on here.
He's not dumb.
That's right. It isn't something that he's going to be completely taken by surprise. Something is a little stranger. And we hear the alarm going off the whole time also.
And it's quite interesting the way he almost doesn't have time or an opportunity to really piece this together and think about
it. Correct. Especially since somebody puts a hand on his arm. You know?
Yeah. Whereas I think if he didn't get distracted, I think he might have started going, wait, no, I need to go and speak to someone.
That's right. I think so too. And, you know, as that arm comes on him, you know, the alarm stops and it basically distracts him.
Finally, though, God damn, that alarm. I'd have been pulling, I was going to say I'd be pulling my hair out, but I haven't got any hair.
You would be going, you would have migraines like Simon, maybe.
That's maybe why he's got the migraine.
Maybe.
It's brought it on. It's made it worse. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have a great shot that Simon looks up and like smirks looking at the alarm, you know, as it stops. And then we see one of the other guys looking up also. But the one thing you can say is that these guys are patient. They're taking their time.
That's the crucial part of this, that they've planned it all out meticulously. They're taking their time. They're not just running in and gunning everyone down. No. That wouldn't work.
That's right. That's right. They do it really well. Mm-hmm. And that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
No, I think that's everything. I mean, the key part to me was just Samuel L. Jackson and then the boots. They're the two most important parts here. Two of my favorite bits.
And there you go.
I know that might sound weird that someone looking at boots is one of my favorite bits, but it's just so clever. So clever.
Because it just works really well with what's going on. It once again shows that these characters are not necessarily dumb.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Because there's too many movies where they're just like, oh, everyone but your lead character is stupid.
That's right. So here you have a guy who's starting to figure things out and then he gets distracted. You know, so that works. Mm-hmm. All right, so the script. So once again, you know, as I've mentioned all week, the script is jumping around. So I'm going to just try and focus on the areas that talk about what's going on here. So you have Zeus and John In the script, they're already at the park when they're having this conversation, but it's the same conversation. So, you know, I'm still going to just use it. So Zeus then says to John, you know, I thought I recognized you. Saw your name in the paper. Read the article, too. Mr. Distinguished Service Medal. So who the fuck John McClane? He goes, you read the article. He goes, fuck the article. Who's John McClane? He's 40 years old. He's a cop. He's divorced because he's a cop. And somebody's trying to kill him. And then he looks at him and goes, who is Zeus Carver? So Zeus goes, he's 29. He owns an appliance shop. He's divorced because none of your fucking business. And somebody's trying to kill him because he saved some white cop's ass.
That's amazing. That, I love it.
So it's a nice way for them to put that in here. And then we're going to continue with the stuff going on in the subway station. It says the fake cops are standing guard. The drivers are building the steel ramp into the crater. Inside the tunnel, 50 yards from the station platform, Simon and Targo stand on the tracks watching the tunnel digger spewing dirt out of 10x6 aperture that's been jackhammered in the concrete wall of the subway tunnel. It backs out. The tunnel digger operator turns to Simon. We're at the armor plate. Simon nods to Targo. Targo crowbars open the huge crate we saw unloaded from the dump truck, revealing a 6-foot diameter diamond-tipped hydraulic drill mounted on treads. He gets behind the controls and starts the engine. A jackhammer hole in the subway wall. The hole is lit with battery-powered construction lamps. Inside the hole, Mr. Luck, the lead dump truck driver, is on his belly next to the electrical conduit the size of a log. The conduit steel casing is ripped open, exposing hundreds of separate electrical wires. Mr. Luck cuts and clamps a wire from the conduit onto a large black box with numerous gauges labeled seismic detector monitor. He prepares to snip and cut the wire. So I got to tell you that this feels too similar to the original Die Hard, you know, where we had Tony and Carl both trying to take out the phone lines, you know, yeah, at the same time. And one of them is underneath. And one of them's above and stuff like that. So I'm glad they took that part out, basically.
Maybe that's what they were thinking. Let's allude to it. But sometimes you can do that too much where it's unrealistic. And it's like, nah, it's taking me out of it now. Because
that's right.
Why would they be doing the exact same thing? You know.
That's right. Well, again, it's you know, this is how they do things in the Gruber household.
Yeah, it's the Gruber method.
That's right. Makes sense.
Yeah, well, does it?
No, I'm saying it makes sense as the Gruber method. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't make sense that they would do that, but still.
No, absolutely not.
Exactly.
So yet again, I think the movie does it right.
Yes, I agree. But I got to say, I do love the way that the conversation between Zeus and John goes in the script.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, I really liked you reading that. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah, you see, and there's even more of that conversation coming up, but I'm leaving that for when they actually do get to the park, because some of the stuff is related to that, you know. So, but it's still great. Yeah. Okay, so every Wednesday we have a segment called Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Samuel L. Jackson performances. So, John, what have you got for us?
Right. Okay. So first off, I'm going to pick one. I imagine nobody's picked this because, you know what? It might not even be a good movie. I haven't seen it in a long time, but it was a very big movie in England, and especially where I live, Liverpool, right? The movie The 51st State. I don't know if that really made a dent anywhere else.
No one else has said it.
That, well, I imagine they wouldn't. Because, again, I mean, it got weird. Like, all American reviewers didn't like it, and all English reviewers were like, this is pretty good, because it's an English movie, but it's got Samuel L. Jackson in it with Robert Carlyle. And everyone else is just the most English people ever, except for, like, Meatloaf, who's in it as well. It's like, you know, it's got all sorts of stuff based around, like, football and things. And there's loads of bits shot in Liverpool and Manchester and things like that.
No,
And as always, though, Samuel L. Jackson is on form. Absolutely. And it's, again, though, I haven't seen it in that long. I don't know if I'd recommend watching it or not, but I really vividly connect him to it.
Okay.
So I had to pick it. I had to pick it because it was such a big movie here as well.
It's so picked and on the list.
There. On the list. Our next one, people probably have chosen this, I imagine. I loved his performance. I didn't love the character, because you're not supposed to, but his performance in Django.
Okay, great.
That, it's such a complicated character, because he's evil, he's a villain, and he betrays people for his master, so to speak, but at the same time, it's like, well, when you break it down, he's been manipulated. You know, so it kind of makes him a very interesting character to think, even though he is properly evil at this point.
Yes.
So, but great dialogue, great lines, great performance. And similarly, I am going with another Tarantino one, which every single person will have chosen, I imagine. Pulp Fiction.
Not everybody. There are two people who didn't choose it.
Really? Now, I actually probably prefer Jackie Brown as a movie. But I think his performance in Pulp Fiction is more memorable. He's such an important part of that film. And it was a lot of people's sort of introduction to him really as a big actor. Even though he had been acting for a while.
Yes. But
that was the first time you were like, whoa, this guy. And it was probably the first time I did the same. Because, I mean, I'd seen him in Jurassic Park. But you don't, he doesn't really stand out in that, you know?
Yeah.
He hasn't got a lot to do. Which is why I've not put Jurassic Park on the list, even though it's one of my favorite movies.
There are two people that have put it on their list, so yeah.
They picked it. See, again, I won't fault them or anything. I just think he hasn't got a standout moment in it, really.
Yeah, just his arm does.
Well, yeah. Jesus. Yeah, his arm, absolutely. So it's a tough. It depends how you're judging it, I suppose. Is it on the movie? I'm picking specifically the actor.
Okay.
So then number two, I'm obsessed with this film. Not so much a later sequel that comes out. Unbreakable. It is another team up of the two from this.
Yes.
And I think that is the best of what's he called? I'm terrible with names. M. Night Shyamalan, Shyamalan, yeah. How do you pronounce it? I think that's his best film. Everyone says Sixth Sense. I think this is a better movie. I think it's absolutely incredible.
Well, I always love Unbreakable for the very fact that it is a superhero movie that shows how it can work in our universe, yeah. In our work, in our world.
Absolutely, absolutely. And somehow it doesn't feel silly. That's even right. Though he's got like a super weakness and everything. Which on paper, you're like, that's dumb. No, it works, and you just buy it. You believe it.
Yeah.
And the ending, I mean, I'm not going to spoil it in case people haven't seen it.
Well, it makes you wonder how David Dunn was able to take showers or baths. You know?
Yeah. Well, I guess when it's a limited amount, it might be fine. You know, a little bit of water is okay. Spray yourself a little. But Samuel L. Jackson in that, it's such a good performance. And then I mean, this isn't a spoiler because all of these movies have a twist. You know, when the twist is revealed, he transforms again almost into like a completely different type of character. And it's, oh, this is amazing. And then I haven't even watched the new one where they, you know, he made a sequel.
Glass.
What was it? Glass.
Glass.
I didn't even watch it because everybody just said, don't bother. You'll be angry. If you love Unbreakable this much, you'll be angry. Don't watch it. And then number one, this movie. I think this is the best one. I think it's the best movie. I think it's a top-notch performance. It was one of my first movies I saw him in. I mean, I said earlier, Pulp Fiction. Would it have been Pulp Fiction or this? It would have been this I saw him in first, wouldn't it?
No, Pulp Fiction came out the year before. But
year before.
The question is, how old were you in 94 that you would have seen Pulp Fiction?
Oh, I saw it far too young. I was allowed to watch whatever I wanted, so I watched it on release. Yeah.
How old were you? So, how old were you in 94?
I was born 86, so
you were eight. You saw Pulp Fiction when you were eight.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have a sister who's 5 years older than me, so I watched what she watched.
Okay, all right, that's fair. I mean, I know
when I was six, my favorite movie was Alien. You know.
Okay. Makes sense.
For good or bad, you know. Yes. There's. Then again, I was always too scared to watch RoboCop. I could watch Alien, Predator, Terminator. They were all my favorites. I couldn't watch RoboCop. I found the killing at the start too scary.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Even to this day, it's like, whoa, that's intense.
Well, I remember when RoboCop came out on video, a friend of mine and myself went and rented it, and we watched certain scenes in slow motion. You know, like the car scene, you know, when the character gets hit and you see the head fly off into the windshield. You know, it's something that I guess I was, what was I, 11 or 12 at the time? No, I was 12 or 13 at the time.
Yeah, so. See, I'm weird with gore. I can't do it. Even though I grew up playing like Mortal Kombat, you know, the goriest video game ever. If it's in a video game, it's fine. In a movie, I'm very, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't like gore either. I don't like gore either. But for some reason at that time, you know, I don't watch horror movies and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe because my friend suggested it. I said, we'll try. Yeah.
But no, I think this is the best one of his movies. Like, right. Everything's perfect. Like when I rewatched it for this, I thought, you know what? It's not as good as the first Die Hard though. And then I at the end, I was like, no, wait, no, it is. It's just as good. It really is. It's equal. It is. And he's a big part of that.
Yes. He's 50% of it.
Yeah. It without him, like if it was just Bruce Willis, it would still be a great movie. It wouldn't be as memorable to me.
Correct. Okay, I can understand that. All right, excellent. So, John, would you like to tell people once again where they can find you?
Yes, you can look up my podcasts. You can just type them in. They'll come up. There's Bat Minute, Miami Minutes, and Hedvig Inch by Angry Inch. And you can look up our network as well, Sleepy Charlie Media. That's the name of our company who make these. You can look us up on Patreon. We've got more shows on there for like $2. You can get even more podcasts if you're not sick of me yet.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, subscribe to my podcast, or my views, and listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Or if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay. Tony
comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.